is Football at 4 on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Football at 4, Chad Brown, and today the Broncos let go of Darian Stewart. And Casey Kreider's gone too, is that right? We know that now? Or
he will not be tendered.
He will not be tendered, right. Which would cost them $2 million for a...
Long snapper. Gonna happen.
So he can still be brought back in some sort of...
Yeah.
Context.
He can accept a normal long snapper deal.
Right. which maybe he'll do. He's a good dude.
Which is veteran minimum.
Todd McShay. I do love the mocks. I'm not going to lie. For the first time, and I was wondering when it was going to happen, Todd McShay has the Broncos taking an offensive lineman with Jonah Williams, the offensive tackle from Alabama.
No.
Why is that an automatic no? Why is
it's not an automatic no, but it's just like a horror show pick. It means so much. It means that Garrett Bowles, another first-round pick, is probably soon to be out the door. It means that... Disagree?
What's the problem with that?
It's just another first-round pick that, you know, Bradley Roby didn't work out. I don't think it's going to work out. So, Sylvester Williams didn't work out. Paxton Lynch didn't work out. Garrett Bowles.
A first-round pick that didn't work out. Because that makes you feel better than admitting organizationally that this pick didn't work out. Now we're making a pick to correct that. You'd rather them stay with the bad pick than make the new pick.
No.
That's kind of what you're saying, homeboy.
Not really. Yes.
Yes, exactly what you're saying. And Zach and Stoke were doing that earlier because they were like, and I think Stoke towards the end came around to my thinking of if the pick is wrong or that keeping that guy is wrong, then you just got to move on. You can't say, we can't take a tackle because
the problem is that will
admit that Garrett Bowles didn't work out. The tape admits it. The tape is clear.
The problem is, in that scenario, you are now paying Paul to pay Peter, or whatever that expression, you're...
Robbing
Paul. I guess you wouldn't be paying both of them. That wouldn't make any sense, robbing Paul to pay Peter. Because
then they would both be happy.
Because if you're just paying both of them, then who cares?
Right.
Like, they're both pretty stoked, except maybe one's jealous of the other or whatever you paid them.
You're the only one who's mad because you're paying both.
Right. But you may be paying them in fishes and loaves, so maybe they're okay. Maybe one guy's more. All right, I'm going too far here. Carbs more than fish. All right. I get it. Bowles is a disaster. I think they can retain Veldheer, I think. The problem is and it was interesting to hear Mark Schlereth, by the way, admit Bradley Chubb was a mistake today. That was interesting. He finally said it. He caved in. He said Quentin Nelson would have been a better pick than Bradley Chubb. Who, I was told, that's who Gary Kubiak actually wanted. Yeah. Oh, well.
Mm-hmm.
Offensive linemen from Alabama are pretty good.
Considering who they see in practice every day.
It's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
Right. So I can't totally hate on it because it makes sense. And when you look at offensive linemen in free agency, oh boy.
Ooh.
It is like our guy, Nate Solder, you know, who was our guy. But look at the year he just had with the Giants as he was available in free agency. So I get it, Chad.
Okay.
It just is just one of those deep breath moments where you realize you're going to be short somewhere else. And you had the shot to be okay in that particular spot, and now we're chasing something else.
What if you kick Garrett to the right side? He ends up starting for the next 8 years over there.
You know, that would be great. And I think they'd have to do that, by the way. I don't think you draft a guy at 10 to be your right tackle, do you?
Sometimes, I mean, Jonathan Ogden, Hall of Fame tackle, started at guard early in his career.
Yeah.
Before he moved to tackle.
But that's exactly what McShay is saying about this pick at 10 for the Broncos, is they're going to have their right tackle for the next decade.
I think McShay is off on this a little bit for a bunch of complicated reasons. Not that I don't like his logic. He's got Kyler Murray going number one to the Cardinals. And to me, that means Josh Rosen gets in the mix. But we just heard that the Raiders would be interested in Rosen. The Patriots would have to be interested in Rosen, right?
Have to.
the Redskins would have to be interested in Rosen. I mean, there's got to be a half dozen teams at that value.
Wouldn't be. Who's got a great quarterback and a great backup? Outside of those teams, and off the top of my head, I'm not coming up with very many, how could you not want a potential number one pick for the third, for a third rounder? That's a
and what a dream
value
come
proposition.
True, basically for Elway. What a, it's like a get out of free jail card, isn't it?
You get a chance to get out of jail. You have your Joe Flacco in place. You bring this guy in for great value. What did Paul say? $6 million over the next 3 years?
It's nothing.
It's a steal.
It's a steal. You probably, if you make the deal, can dump Case Keenum. Which I think they would be okay keeping Case Keenum, to be honest with you, if he was just willing to restructure stuff. Every objection about Rosen falls on deaf ears for me. It doesn't mean there's no reason at a third round value getting rid of Case Keenum to not do it. It's in fact, I would even go as high. I would go a second round. Would you go a second round?
Yeah, I think I would. I think I would. Depending on where I was picking, I think I would.
I would too.
Early second, that'd be difficult. But later half of the second round, I think I'd be okay with it. I think the value would be okay. Now, going back to Todd McShay and Jonah Williams.
Yeah.
Teams that have really good offensive line coaches usually don't pick in the draft offensive linemen very high. Because offensive line, even if you are a Jonah Williams, even if you are a Garrett Bowles or any other first-round pick we can possibly think of, it typically takes some time. Think about some of these first-round pick tackles or first pick in the draft tackles over these last couple of years who have struggled. Offensive line, the transition from college to NFL is a difficult one. It's more of a, you're not an athlete just coming in and plugging in that running back like Phillip Lindsay, who brings more to the table than just athleticism. You have to become a technician to be an offensive lineman. Outside of Solder and, who was the guy that had a guard with the Patriots? When they've had Dante Scarnecchia, they don't draft early in New England with the offensive line. They mold guys. They get guys from other teams who fit Scarnecchia's ideal. So if you got Mike Munchak in place, I think that gives you the opportunity to not feel like you have to reach for offensive line. We have a guy who can mold pretty good players out of a pretty rough piece of clay.
Yeah, Isaiah Wynn was a first-round pick for the Patriots who was hurt, so he kind of got a redshirt year.
Right.
Which, of course, is going
to
be great.
Yeah, I was going to go back to Logan Mankins. That's who I was thinking of. He was drafted when I was in New England.
Oh, I guess I'd be okay with it, but, you know, I would just say, well, what are we doing? I mean, in McShay's mock, he takes the offensive tackle over Devin White. I mean, are we going to get C.J. Mosley? But I'm told C.J. Mosley can't cover. Like, well, George Kittle's going to have another good day, I suppose, or, you know, every single team who has a George Kittle-like guy. It was tricky, though, for the Broncos, Chad, today. A bit of a sad day. One of the guys that brought a bright light is now gone. The impact of letting go of one of the Super Bowl 50 heroes, we'll discuss it next.
It's The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
The King of the Wing contest was unbelievable. It was really, really great. Really great. And we'll dig into some of the funny highlights. And there were a lot of funny highlights from that after 4:30. So props to Mike Evans and Orlando Franklin. And I don't think Mike did himself any favors after his heart surgery. But again, we'll dig into that after 4:30. Chad Brown is here. The news of Darian Stewart being released. And Darian Stewart sent out a, you know, a nice little message to the fans via Twitter. Eric Weddle, same thing. Tough time of the year, isn't it, Chad? Can you describe what this is like for veteran players?
It's a weird sense of uncertainty. In some ways, if you play long enough, your career is going to come full circle. You come in as an uncertain rookie, trying to figure things out, trying to, you know, show your value. And, you know, eventually you become good enough. You get your free agent deal. You make some good money. You become a starter. You walk around very confident. You walk past that guy at the door during training camp who cuts people. You walk past him without a second thought in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get to this place where these two guys are. And now you're maybe going to start over. Maybe for Eric, he goes back to San Diego, try to finish up at home.
It does give you some flexibility, I suppose, right? If you can still play.
Yeah, you've made your money. So money's not the most important factor at this point. Now you want to go someplace where you'll be valued, where there's a potential to win some games. So other things become factors. Where's my family want to be? What's the best opportunity for my kids, you know, depending on how old your kids are? So all those things become a factor. But then you walk into that door on that new team, or even to go back to San Diego for Eric. Thank you, Big Sexy. Los Angeles, not San Diego. And you still have that weird, uncertain feeling that you felt as a rookie. I've got to prove myself again. And then that creates doubt. Do I still have it? Can I still play? Can I do what I just did last year? How far have I slipped down the slope? All those things start to come up. So it's a weird time as a professional athlete because you've spent so much time being confident, and now your confidence has been robbed from you.
You know, I'm reflecting on what Bill Belichick said because somebody asked him about, how do you build a roster? Because that's essentially what's going on right now, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, ultimately. And his answer was, great answer. You know, for every problem, there's probably three or four solutions. So there's no exact one right thing to do. There's things you got to do that day, that week, that month, for years later. So a guy like, and I think this may apply to the Broncos now. There may be a veteran out there in a lot of different positions that we know isn't going to be here for a huge period of time. And Darius Stewart was here for a long period of time. You know, he was a great acquisition, and I think he had a terrific impact while he was here, right?
Right.
And the legacy of being part of a Super Bowl winning team is awesome. And there's fewer and fewer of those guys on the team.
And let's give the no-fly zone their props. For a period of time, the best secondary in football. And if you're going to start ranking the top 10 or 15 secondaries of all time, that group deserves to be talked about.
Isn't it wild, though? T.J. Ward, gone. Keep Tlaib, gone. Darren Stewart now, gone.
It's not wild. It's football. It feels...
It's tricky when you make up nicknames for yourself.
It feels wild, but it's not. This is how it works. The band does not stay together.
Yeah. But who could be one of those guys that could bring... I'm thinking of the importance of, like, DeMarcus Ware. DeMarcus Ware was such an important player for the Broncos. But he just didn't have... he didn't have full seasons left in him. He had partial seasons. You know, he had plays that he could contribute, but his importance to the team was crazy. Is there anybody out there that you can think like that? Like, you know, maybe their importance of leadership and who they are as a person may outweigh how many games and how exactly they contribute for just a short period of time.
I'm thinking back to a couple years ago with Atlanta. Dwight Freeney came in. Came in off his couch. Gave them a spark of pass rush the second half of the season and played well in the playoffs for them. So that's the kind of guy you're talking about. An older veteran, maybe can't play the full season or shouldn't play the full season.
If the safeties are Justin Simmons and Will Parks, and you just know that, well, is there somebody else that could just be thrown into that mix and have that kind of impact on the team? So it goes beyond... The players for the future are kind of set. It's Will Parks and Justin Simmons, you would think, and you can ride that out for actually quite a while. But who else is there that's out there that's like that?
Well, I think that guy is only limited to a couple of different positions because it can't be a position that's based on athleticism. Antonio Gates, because his rapport with Phillip Rivers, can be that guy in L.A.
You can make the argument Stokely was one of those guys for Peyton Manning.
Yeah, so you can have that guy as a slot receiver, as a tight end, as a pass rusher.
But not at a safety.
Maybe at safety.
Like Eric Weddle. How would Eric Weddle be here for a year? Maybe two.
Again, as long as you could come up with schemes that would prevent him from being schemed up where he's one-on-one with somebody, he's great at disguising blitzes. he knows everyone's responsibility in the secondary. Depending on scheme and coverage, he can flip-flop coverages. We're going to go, you know, from cover three to cover two. He's fantastic at all of that. But you go with five wides, and for some reason he's forced to come down and cover somebody, well, that's a win for the other team.
Mm.
So you could do it, but you'd have to come up with some creative scheming to avoid that possibility. Do I think he can still be a starter for the right team? Yeah, he can be.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're at a point, yeah, Eric Weddle could work. But at some point, with the right scheme, he's going to be exposed. And if you're okay with that happening a couple times a year, then he could be the guy because he's going to provide so much leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to provide you so much flexibility and so much experience back there. It's one thing to have a safety who occasionally misses a tackle. It's quite another if you have a safety who can't get everyone lined up. So you got Will Parks stepping into that role. And if it happens two or three times a game where he can't get everyone lined up, that's an automatic first down or a 30-yard gain for the offense, as opposed to Eric Weddle missing a tackle because he's no longer great in space, and now it's just a 10-yard gain.
So the release of Darian Stewart may be an opportunity. And we thank Darian Stewart for the time he was here. He was a great player. He brought a positive energy to the team. Like, it would be awesome to find the next Darian Stewart or somebody absolutely. That can contribute like that. So way to go, Darian Stewart. Sorry to see you go. It's the nature of the game. When we come back, one of the funniest videos of all time. There's some classic lines. Zach Bine might have had the funniest line the whole thing. We'll get to that. And could the NFL be radically changing their policy on marijuana? Hang on. This is Colorado. Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
It's The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Yeah, we'll get to some highlights of King of the Wing here in a little bit. Orlando and Mike, one of the funniest videos we've done. We'll feature it here in a second. But Chad Brown here. Chad, this is interesting.
That's my name, Chad. Mm-hmm. Although Chadwick is technically my full first name.
The NFL could implement the Sky Judge. Have you seen any of the AAF?
I have.
What are your thoughts on the AAF so far?
Clearly a lower level of football. Some of the games are compelling. But the lasting thing from the AAF will be the Sky Judge.
It's a no-brainer.
It's an absolute no-brainer. I'm not sure why every league doesn't implement this immediately.
Hey, Big Sexy, by the way, can you look up, has the Sky Judge even been used at all in any of the AAF games?
Yes.
It has? You know that for a fact?
They've changed calls, yes.
How many times has it been used?
I want to say I read about it last week, so I'm not sure if it's happened this
last
week.
So let's say one time, maybe?
Yeah. But still, get it right.
Well, I guess so. We're, what, 3-4 weeks into the AAF?
Mm-hmm.
There's 8 teams. There's 4 games a weekend. So we're talking about, I guess, 12 games? All right. I mean, if that's the case, that basically means it would be used, if we're going on that parameter, once every weekend then in the NFL.
Which I think would be about right. Each weekend there is a call on Monday.
Well, that's a lot to me.
That we come in and we talk about how it was a blown call. The Sky Judge would fix, even if it fixed just half, would be a tremendous improvement.
Well, if that's the way it's been, then, because I thought, you know, on the surface.
Really quick.
Yeah.
So this was actually written on March 4th by Mike Florio. The AAF's inaugural season, for the first time, the Sky Judge made a call in the Birmingham-San Antonio game this past weekend.
There we go.
So around 12 games or so, and it's been used once. I'm just saying, if you were to extrapolate that over an NFL season, that's once a weekend.
Great.
Well, that's a lot, which is great.
Uh-huh.
Which makes, well, does it make it a no-brainer?
It makes it an absolute no-brainer. If I'm talking to Troy Vincent over there at the league office, how quickly can you guys get this going? And maybe you can get some practice with the Sky Judges during mini camps. They have these cameras set up at mini camps and rookie camps just so people can get practice and get up to speed with this by the time the preseason rolls around.
Andy Reid wants to make a push for NFL overtime rules, both teams to touch the ball. Good idea, bad idea?
Bad idea.
Oh, man, I so disagree with you. Why do you think it's a bad idea?
Win the game in the regular season, in the regular time.
It didn't happen. Now we're in overtime. Now what?
If you... The fact that you didn't try to win in regular time and you decided, well, I'm going to play for overtime, that's the risk you take of losing the coin toss.
Dude, okay, I get your mystical theories on things here, but...
I'm not sure why that's mystical.
Because it's a mystical and ethereal. What is the most fair way to determine this? Forget about how we got there. Like, now we're here. Now what?
No, you can't talk about overtime and ignore regular time. Win the game in regular time. If the rule becomes both teams get to touch the ball and everybody wins a ribbon and a trophy, then the last 5 minutes...
So college gets it wrong.
Yeah.
Really?
Let's take football and throw it out the window and give everybody a 7-on-7 thing and the ball. I hate the college overtime.
Avs just won last night, 3-on-3 in hockey. I mean, it was pretty awesome.
That is ridiculous. We changed the game in overtime.
Ridiculous. It was fun. There was a winner, and Nathan MacKinnon was a hero. It was freaking awesome.
Okay, well, I'm not even here to discuss hockey in their overtime.
But the concept
rules
is that they change how the game's played a little bit to get to a winner where both teams have a chance to possess the puck.
Okay. Mr. Baseball purist, they start changing.
Well, they're talking about, and I think they're doing it in spring training games, putting the California tiebreaker in baseball, putting a runner on second once you get to the 10th inning, which I'm not for in the 10th inning, but you can convince me in the 11th inning, we're going to stick a runner on second so we can hurry this along.
So that's like the college rule where you start to have to go for two after the first two overtime periods. Same thing.
All right, we'll dig into it deeper later. The marijuana rule. It was years ago that I asked Roger Goodell, are you tested for marijuana? This is a complicated issue, and I'm definitely not sitting here advocating for the use of marijuana, just like I would not advocate for the use of Jack Daniels. But we have now, well, we're in Colorado, so we're used to this, but there are so many states now that have just legalized marijuana. So my concept isn't to promote marijuana usage, but my concept, Chad, and what the NFL to do, in my opinion, are just to simply stop testing for it and not have a consequence for it, knowing that it's not the greatest thing in the world, but neither is whiskey. Neither is drinking too much. Chad, do you think the NFL is moving towards just not testing for marijuana rather than, advocating for it? Do you think we're going in that direction?
I think we are definitely going in that direction. When you think about the number of careers that have suffered because of the NFL's policies on marijuana. I think the NFL will definitely go in that direction. It gets tricky because, players in states where marijuana is not legal will be still subject to the laws. So if you're caught in your car with weed in, look at this map here, Florida, that's still going to be an issue for you.
For weed.
That's still going to be an issue.
Okay, fine. I mean, that's, you can't be smoking weed and driving. I'm not. If you have impaired abilities while you're behind a wheel, yeah, you should face a serious consequence.
I'm not talking about that, but just in the state of Florida, there's no medical laws, there's no recreational laws, so just having weed in your car is going to get you caught. While the NFL, and you're a Miami Dolphin or a Jacksonville Jaguar, is not going to test for it, so they're turning a blind eye. You would still be subjected to that. Where here in Colorado, you got weed in your car, I think you have less in the house, you're okay.
And that's exactly the issue that TJ Ward ran into. Not that it was in his car, but he had it in his possession in Florida. The 99 grams of weed.
We'll see what the NFL does. We'll keep an eye on it, though. And it feels like it's progressively going in that direction.
I don't say it doesn't. It's not feeling. It's going in that direction. There are enough players now in the league office who have the ear of Roger Goodell who will be able to push that forward.
Have you seen the video of Evans in Orlando?
No, I have not seen the video. I have.
Delicious.
It is hysterical.
I have watched Evans crush the buffet, but this was pre-heart stuff.
You got to see the video. It's on Facebook. It's at 1043thefan.com. There were so many classic lines.
You got to remember, Mike Evans, in the most literal sense, ate his way into a new heart. So to say that this is a new challenge for him, that's just not true.
Orlando Franklin.
Orlando, what's going through your head right now?
He needs to quit. I'm trying to break him. You know, he came out here. He's been talking trash for the last couple weeks. You know, I dressed in all black. Today's his funeral.
Oh, wow.
Big words, guys.
I hear you.
Wow. I'm dressed in all black because it's his funeral.
That's a good one.
My favorite line of the whole thing. And by the way, Orlando won. Big sexy. Orlando won. I'm sure you would have, if there was a real competition. I know. But he did put down, what, did he put down 70 wings? Mike had 64 to 70?
That is the final total.
I mean, it's sickening. And at the end, Zach Bye.
30 seconds left. The Mike Evans Championship T-shirts are being sent to third world countries. Orlando.
Classic. The Mike Evans Championship shirts are being sent to third world countries. And then this nugget in the end was Scott DeHuff interviewing Orlando Franklin.
Orlando, you're a Super Bowl champion. Where's this rank?
I was at a Super Bowl that lost when we got.
Oh, that's right. Awkward.
Adam Schefter has thrown a huge tub of ice water onto the Kyler Murray sweepstakes. And why are parents throwing cheese on their babies' faces? Details next.
You're listening to The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
You're as cold as ice. You're willing to sacrifice our love.
30 seconds left. The Mike Evans Championship T-shirts are being sent to third world countries.
Never take advice.
Chad Brown, D-Mac. I'm not joking. I thought it was a joke, but there's a Washington Post story about parents throwing cheese on their babies' faces.
I've seen an image on social media. It's like a slice of American cheese.
It's a slice of American cheese. Should we feel guilty laughing at this? Because I saw a minute-long compilation and I was dying with laughter.
Yeah.
And then I felt, oh my gosh, this. Maybe I. This is wrong.
But funny.
It was one of the. I hate to say it was one of the funniest things I'd ever seen. But, you know, I'm sure as soon as I say that, there's probably somebody who's going to tell me why it's the worst thing in the world. It'll mentally scar these kids, and you can't use your kids as props. And you know, at the end of the day, I'll be like, oh, you're all right. You're all right. I'll take it back. But
America's Funniest Home Videos has been a show for like 20-plus years because dads get hit with a ball in there.
Mm. Would you throw a piece of cheese on one of your babies and film it and post it?
I would not.
Would your wife?
No, she would not. But I see the humor.
You know, dude, I don't know how I could stop myself from giving it a shot.
But film it? Would you film it? Or would you just...
I think I'd have to.
I mean, we got kids. We both have two kids.
And now if I, you know,
we love our kids.
My kids, if I did it now, they would just beat me up. Right. I mean, they're much bigger, stronger, and more athletic than I am. Which is it's a low bar, trust me. Anyways, it's out there. Wait, I'm just telling you.
You bragged to me about your soccer skills.
Yeah, it's all done. You know, Father Time is closing the door on anything. The only thing, even with this knee surgery, I think I could beat out most people who are just great athletes but can't do something is ski down a mountain, and that's it. And at this point with his knee stuff, if you've got significant skiing abilities, you probably that was a one trump card I had.
Soccer's out. Got,
oh,
softball?
Soccer's. No, softball's. I can't. My knee's all messed up. I can't.
Skiing's out.
Skiing's not completely out, but skiing the way I used to ski is probably out.
Can you still drum?
Yeah, I can still drum. I just was always pretty mediocre at that. Let me tell you, I never bragged about that. Aside from the fact, never brag. I might have. There are real drummers out there. I would be humiliated if you put me side by side with like a real drummer.
You invited me to a couple of gigs. I was like, I'm pretty good, man. You should check me out.
You'd be surprised because I look like I can't do anything. So there would be a moment of like, whoa, that's kind of impressive, but it wouldn't be beyond like you're good.
I don't think it's as impressive as D-Mac on the piano.
Yeah, that would surprise you too.
That would surprise me.
But compared to real keyboard players or pianists, I mean, I am terrible. But, you know, you see me as just like a small little dumpy Irish dude. I mean, you know, it would get your attention. That's it. It's not very impressive after that, Chad, so.
Can you cook?
No, of course not.
Are you good at yard work?
Brutal. Just, no.
Can you detail a car?
What? No.
Can you iron a shirt?
Nope. Duh.
It's true, you can barely shave, so.
Not good at that either. I am pretty good at reading Adam Schefter's Twitter, though. And here's what I pride myself a tad on, is reading between the lines.
Give it to me.
So when you've got Charlie, what do you think of Charlie Casserly first? Let's just start there. What's your opinion of Charlie Casserly?
When he comes on, I'm interested, but I don't take it his word as the gospel truth.
Let me play a little bit of Charlie Casserly just to frame the conversation.
Well, you better hope Kingsbury takes him number one because this was not good. This was the worst comments I ever got on a high-rated quarterback.
Really?
I've been doing this a long time. I'm probably doing it longer than you're alive anyway.
You have. Yes, that's why I said leadership. Really?
Yes, leadership, not good. Okay, study habits, not good. The board work, below not good. Not good at all in any of those areas, see? And raising major concerns about what this guy's going to do now.
Okay. Do you trust Charlie Casserly's sources and what he does to form his opinion?
Do I take it as seriously and as strongly as he presents it? I never have. But do I take it there's a grain of truth in what he's saying? And did he hear someone say this? Absolutely. Was that person most likely a person in the room for some of these Kyler Murray interviews? Yes. But was it presented as definitively as Charlie said it? Probably not. But I think there's a grain in truth in what he says almost all the time. Probably not just the strength behind it.
But we saw Kyler Murray go on the Rich Eisen show and the Dan Patrick show in Super Bowl week, and it was a disaster.
Terrible.
I mean, awful. Like, we saw his dad standing like 5 feet away, sort of, you know, oh, there's dad. Not exactly LeVar Ball, but, you know, there's dad. I went and looked at YouTube videos of when he played high school baseball just to look at body language. And because I know what the high-level high school baseball scene is all about. It's expensive. There's a lot of crazy intangibles that are evaluated, and I've seen kids like Kyler Murray, unbelievably talented, horrible body language, and just kind of out there to do what he can when he can do it. No extra stuff there, no great leadership skills. It's easy to find. Just go to YouTube and look at his high school baseball highlights. Now, as a pro for baseball, that crap doesn't matter. They do not care. It does. There's no rah-rah stuff in high-level professional baseball. It's a bottom-line business. They don't care. But in college, college baseball is like a girls' high school or a middle school softball team. I mean, it is like, well, we're wearing like ribbons in our hair. You know, we got matching face paint on. College baseball is ridiculous like that, Chad.
Mm-hmm. What color barrettes are we wearing today, right?
Yeah, usually it's some sort of theme, mm-hmm. School colors, or maybe there's some sort of charity we're working for. So to see that sort of attitude, it told me that this is an entitled kid right here. This is an entitled guy. This is somebody who's been told he's incredibly special for a long time. And he is. But that just seems to me a tough way to enter the NFL, Chad. Seems like a tough way. And he's a chaser. He's always been a chaser.
When you say chaser, give it to me. Give me to the listeners.
What's
as
the
well.
Best team? I'm 12. What's the best team at 13? 13. What's the best team at 14? Nah, I'm not going to play in this tournament because I'm going to this prospect camp. I'm going to this 7-on-7 tournament, so I'm going to miss high school practice, but I'm going to somewhere in Fort Lauderdale with dad. You know, we're chasing. We're you know what? I'm going to go to Oklahoma to play quarterback for a year after being at A&M. Chase. It's tricky, Ben. It's tricky because you just don't build up that loyalty. And you tell me, what does it mean to get respect in the locker room? How do you do it as a quarterback, especially a young quarterback?
You win ball games, but I think your leadership has to show it. It has to come through. Every great quarterback I've ever been around has a, they're all different in so many different ways, but there has a leadership quality about them that gets others to buy in. It gets others to, you know, be that rising tide that lifts all those boats. Whether it's Warren Moon or Tom Brady, this leadership thing at the quarterback position is not just a intangible, it is a requirement. Mm. And the skill set for Kyler Murray, I think, is fantastic. Some of that college tape is just amazing. Do I think his skill set translates directly to the NFL? Clearly, it doesn't. Then you add this on top of that, I'd be very...
Are we seeing some trends here?
I'd be very nervous.
So the hype during the combine on NFL Network was just like, Rosen is gone. And then I'm hearing the value. And of course I think, well, this is unbelievable for the Broncos. This is such a gift, an absolute no-brainer. And I'm going to guess that sort of response surprised the Cardinals. So here's what Schefter put out. You got to understand something about our guy Schefter. When he puts something out, I trust Adam. I don't think he's 100% right on everything. But, man, I trust his process. I trust his process, which means he talks, Chad, to the top-level guys. He's not just beating Charlie Casserly. I don't know. I mean, he may run into, like, an old 70-year-old guy who used to work for a scout for the Cowboys. And, you know, while they're washing their hands, he may get a nugget and go right to TV.
Charlie's a little bit more tied in than that. But
well, you know what I mean. He's not like Adam.
Adam is the top of the game, no doubt. He's the first pick in the draft.
You know, Adam's bumping around with 7.2 million followers on Twitter. You know, I don't know what Charlie Casserly is running around. I think Charlie's connected, but to me, these older information NFL guys, Chad, their sources tend to be just older guys too, which makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Casserly has 51,000, rather.
51,800.
Sorry. Syracuse education.
No, that's what it says on Twitter.
Here's what Schefter said. Multiple teams inquired about Josh Rosen's availability at the combine last week. Though Arizona did not give those teams any indication that it is willing to move on from Josh Rosen at this time, according to two league sources who spoke to the Cardinals. This doesn't mean Arizona won't wind up shopping Josh Rosen eventually, but it hasn't to date, as the Cardinals have not responded to the overtures that they've received from other teams while they're going through the draft evaluation process.
Now, the Cardinals have to do this because they can't say who they're going to pick with that number one pick. They need to still be open to somebody getting panicky.
You know what they're doing too? You know what they're doing there too? Hang on. I'll tell you exactly what they're doing. When we come back,
I was about to tell you too, but I know it's a commercial break. I know it's radio. We got to pay the bills.
We'll compare our theories. We'll compare our tinfoil hat theories.
Mine's not a tinfoil hat.
Meanwhile, we'll have time to throw some cheese on babies, and Mark Schlereth will be excited about offensive linemen.
It's your daily exclamation mark with Mark Schlereth, brought to you by Schomp BMW.
Michael, in my hot little hand right here, I've got the new mock draft from Todd McShay. Has the Denver Broncos at number 10, departing the defensive ways that we've talked about, you know, the cornerback position, the defensive line position, the linebacker position, the strength of this particular draft to go offensive lineman Jonah Williams from Alabama. And I'm thinking to myself, Alabama, offensive lineman. That just makes sense to me. You could do a lot worse than going after Jonah Williams at 10 overall. The guy's been a consummate pro for Alabama. You know he's been coached well because he played at Alabama under Nick Saban. That makes a lot of sense to me for this Denver Broncos team. Let's fix that glaring weakness, and it's been a glaring weakness now for the better part of a decade. Let's get our tackle position squared away. We already have the best offensive line coach, if not one of the best offensive line coach, Dante Scarnecchia, in Mike Munchak. I think this is a wise move. I think it's a move that makes sense. It's a move that needs to be addressed, or a position that needs to be addressed. So I think Todd McShay is on to something here in his mock draft. We need tackles. We need offensive linemen when it's time to kick off the ball in September. Get your cleats on the grass.
Mark Schlereth and Mike Evans tomorrow morning at 6 on Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan.